Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. Today is Tuesday, August 5th. I'm Ola Kuziz. Tree canopy in St. Louis is another mark of the city's racial and economic divide. After the tornado, there's even more work to do to overcome barriers to tree ownership for communities in the storm's path.
They don't want nothing in their yard. They don't want a tree near them because they fall and break stuff.
We'll hear more about the St. Louis organization's rebuilding trust in trees. Also coming up, in St. Louis, many families of homicide victims say they were left in the dark, unsure of what, if anything, to expect from police after losing a loved one.
Families should still feel empowered to reach out and ask questions and not be afraid to ask about updates.
The Marshall Project's Ivy Scott speaks with St. Louis Public Radio's Brian Munoz about her series of recently published guides for families coping with unsolved homicides. Those stories coming up after this news on The Gateway. The Machinists Union that represents Boeing employees in St. Louis, St. Charles, and Muskoka are on strike. As St. Louis Public Radio's Olivia Mizell reports, the union rejected Boeing's modified contract offer on Sunday.
In front of the Boeing facility in St. Charles, members of IAM District 837 have been striking since midnight. Some passing cars honk their horns in support. Chevy Williams is a flight operations mechanic at Boeing's Berkeley location. He has worked for the company for nearly 18 years and says he is standing in solidarity with the younger employees.
I know in the past we have just taken what they offered, and we haven't really fought back and demanded that they compromise and meet us halfway.
Boeing offered a 20% general wage increase over 4 years, which is less than what the union proposed. I'm Olivia Mizell, St. Louis Public Radio.
The St. Louis County Council could decide if a full audit of the prosecuting attorney's office is necessary following a preliminary investigation. State Auditor's Office reviewed credit card statements, travel expenses, and Sunshine Law compliance. It also investigated if some county prosecutors work secondary jobs in other municipalities on the clock. Auditors say they found some irregularities and ways for the office to improve. The report did not suggest significant improper governmental activity. Kelly Davis is a state auditor director.
There were some policy violations, and the current prosecutor indicated that they are going to adhere to strict adherence to policy going forward, without exceptions.
Some council members were disappointed in the review for its limited scope. The St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department has agreed to return an automatic rifle to Mark McCloskey. McCloskey and his wife were forced to surrender the rifle and a second firearm after pleading guilty to pointing the guns at protesters in 2021. The misdemeanor charges were later expunged, and Mark McCloskey sued to get the weapons back. The second gun, a pistol, is in possession of the sheriff's department. McCloskey has asked the court to order that weapon returned as well. If you were looking to stop in a favorite restaurant in St. Louis in July, you might have found a new one in its place. St. Louis Public Radio's Jessica Rogan reports.
Last July, one of St. Louis's only kosher restaurants closed. A year later, Pierce Creek moved into what had been Cone's Kosher Meat and Deli. The Butcher Restaurant and More now offers a little bit of everything in its Creve Coeur space. Fans of Filipino eatery Manileño were sad to see it closed, but things brightened for the spot when Vietnamese restaurant Pho Long moved in last month. In the Foundry, Sureste Mexican rebranded to Taqueria del Sureste. You can find more local restaurant openings and closings on stlpr.org. I'm Jessica Rogan, St. Louis Public Radio.
The number of cattle in the U.S. is at a record low and declining. Beef prices are up, but many farmers still aren't turning a profit because costs are rising as well. As Harshan Ratanpal reports, some experts say farmers making their own hay is part of the problem.
Carson Roberts is the state forage specialist with the University of Missouri Extension and says smaller farmers can save money and time by having their cows graze grass in the winter. That requires planning and land, so Roberts says buying hay from larger operations can save money. But he says there's a cultural component to making hay, and old habits die hard. Wilburn Harris is a cattle farmer in Cass County.
I've been doing it since I've been 5 or 6 years old out there messing with it. And that's what you do in the summer because you have to take care of the cattle in the winter.
Harris also says making his own hay gives him more control over feed quality and feeding schedules. I'm Harshon Ratanpal.
Governor J.B. Pritzker has enacted a law aimed at expanding mental health support for Illinois grade students. Mawa Iqbal has more.
Under current law, mental health screenings at schools are not mandatory. But starting in the 2027-2028 academic year, schools must offer free screenings to students in grades 3 through 12 at least once a year. Pritzker says these screenings will make sure kids who are struggling get help as soon as possible.
They help us break down the stigma that too often is a barrier to seeking help. Our schools should be inclusive places where students are not just comfortable asking for help, but they're empowered to do it.
The Illinois State Board of Education by next fall must also provide schools with guidelines to help with implementation. I'm Mawa Iqbal.
The Del Mar Divide can be seen from above. There are fewer trees in lower-income, majority-black neighborhoods in St. Louis. In recent years, nonprofits have been working to even things out. But as St. Louis Public Radio's Kate Grumke reports, the tornado changed that work overnight.
On a recent Saturday, music played as people took their seats in a conference room at Mission St. Louis on North Grand Boulevard.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Good morning. We are so glad that you have chosen to be with us this Saturday.
The crowd is here for a day-long retreat focused on healing relationships between communities of color and nature. But plans for the retreat changed after the tornado that hit St. Louis. InPower Institute founder and executive director Rebecca Bennett is walking between tables.
Who remembers where they were on May 16th? We want to hold the paradox today, both for a reverence for nature and for the fear that is caused by nature.
This event is part of the Treezilience program, a national initiative to rebuild urban tree canopy. In St. Louis, it's led by Forest Relief, a nonprofit that grows and plants trees across Missouri. At the Saturday event, people shared their memories of the tornado and talked about the reasons they and their neighbors don't always want trees in their yards. One of those attendees was Diana Fluellen. A few days later, she's raking up a big pile of mulch in her front yard in the Fairground Park neighborhood.
Yeah, we got a lot of mulch, so I gotta bag it up.
This mulch is what's left of a huge sweet gum tree that her mother planted decades ago. It split in the May 16th tornado, falling on Fluellen's roof and the building next to her. She says despite the damage the old tree caused, she wants to put a new one in.
Yeah, I will put one back in for the environment. I'm learning more about the climate change and stuff like this, going to these like, different programs and how it's good for people with asthma, cleans the air.
But she says many of her neighbors don't want trees.
They don't want nothing in their yard. They don't want a tree near them because they fall and break stuff.
Fluellen had firsthand experience with that recently. Her insurance paid a company to remove her tree, and she was shocked by the price.
They took part of the tree off and part of some of the little limbs that was left, and they charged State Farm $24,000+.
Cost is a huge barrier to tree ownership in low-income neighborhoods, says Kelly Hicks. She's the environmental justice lead at Forest Relief and coordinates the Treezilience program.
We know that the cost of tree removal and often even tree pruning can be really expensive.
That's why Treezilience offers tree services for free, along with workshops and saplings to plant. Hicks says cost issues and other divestment have led to major disparities in tree canopy. About a fifth of the Fairground Park census area where Fluellen lives had tree canopy before the tornado. In wealthier, wider St. Louis County neighborhoods, tree canopy can be more than double that.
When you think about divestment, you tend to think of it in the forms of things that are more infrastructure. A lot of people don't think about environmental infrastructure and how that can impact people's well-being.
Forest Relief and Hicks hope to continue to grow the relationship between people and nature in the tornado's path. I'm Kate Grumke, St. Louis Public Radio.
Visit our website, stlpr.org, to meet one Fairground Park resident who's memorializing her family's walnut tree that was destroyed in the tornado. The vast majority of people killed in St. Louis each year are Black. Yet an investigation by STLPR, APM Reports, and the Marshall Project finds police between 2014 and 2023 solved fewer than half the killings involving Black victims compared to nearly two-thirds involving white victims. The Marshall Project's Ivy Scott speaks with St. Louis Public Radio's Brian Munoz about her reporting on those whose loved ones have been killed and guides designed to help families cope.
One person you spoke with was Sabrina Elam, a woman whose son Jared was killed in 2014, just a few days before his 18th birthday. Sabrina said she was frustrated with the city homicide team's initial response. Can you tell us a little bit more about what happened?
Absolutely. So Sabrina's situation was quite interesting because she had two very different responses from different people on the homicide team. She described an initial response when she was first interacting with a detective where, even with his body language, it seemed as if he wasn't interested in the case, as if it was one among many. And she said that even though she knew that they were totally inundated, that they had a lot of cases to solve, she was still frustrated because she wanted him to behave as if this case was important, as if it mattered to him as much as it did to her. On the flip side, she then ended up interacting with a sergeant on the homicide team, and that interaction, she said, was completely different. This individual was super warm, super welcoming, and made her feel as if she could reach out to them anytime with any question. And this person, she said, gave updates frequently, let her know when there was a new lead or a new tip, and even when there ultimately were not a ton of new leads and there wasn't much investigating that was able to be done and the case did go cold, this sergeant reached out to her and let her know that and said, you know, we don't have much, but I just want you to know we're still thinking about your loved one. And Sabrina said that that was really what made a huge difference.
You've written several guides around unsolved homicides, and one of them is outlining the steps of a homicide investigation. What may families not know what's going on in those early hours and days?
I think one of the most surprising aspects of the investigation when I was talking, and I spoke to a retired homicide detective and some prosecutors, is how much data and information collecting is going on in those early hours and days. And I think for a lot of families, the way it was described to me is that it can feel almost like radio silence, like nothing's happening, like they don't have a ton of news, when really there's just a lot of coordination that's going on between the real-time crime center and the evidence folks, between police and the corresponding prosecutors. And so what they communicated to me is that, you know, while they can't always share a ton of details because there's a lot of information that remains pretty sensitive until they're ready to make that arrest, that families should still feel empowered to reach out and ask questions and not be afraid to ask about updates.
Your reporting also delved into what families want police to know. Some of them mentioned a lack of trust in law enforcement, but what did families say mattered to them most?
The big thing that I heard from families was the importance of consistent communication. They talked about how much it mattered to them when they did hear from detectives routinely every week or even every month. And on the flip side, how frustrating it was when they didn't and when they were constantly having to be the ones to call, to go across the street and pester and ask for updates. And what they communicated was essentially that they completely understand, you know, detectives are busy, they have a lot of cases to solve, but taking the time to treat the case as if it was, you know, their own daughter or son, their own niece or nephew, really made a difference in how they communicated. And even when the case goes cold, even if there are no new leads for weeks or months at a time, not being afraid to deliver that hard news and say, you know, we don't have a ton of new information, but we haven't forgotten about your loved one. They also said that that to them was a really big deal.
Ivy, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
That was the Marshall Project St. Louis engagement reporter Ivy Scott speaking with St. Louis Public Radio's Brian Munoz. The Marshall Project and St. Louis Public Radio are honoring the lives of St. Louis homicide victims through Remember Me, a multimedia art and reporting collaboration featuring original portraits by artist Kababi Bayok. Learn more at stlpr.org/rememberme. Those stories were edited by our Jessica Rogan. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis. Music is by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Ala Kaziz, and from the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this has been The Gateway.